Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. This weekend, the Broadway revival of Terrence McNally's Frankie and Johnny and the Clair de Lune begins previews at the Broadhurst Theater, starring Tony, Grammy, and Emmy Award winner Audra McDonald and two-time Academy Award nominee Michael Shannon. Originally produced more than 30 years ago off-Broadway, Frankie and Johnny and the Clair de Lune is one of McNally's most popular plays. The story centers on a waitress and a short-order cook whose first date turns into a one-night stand and moves, if haltingly, toward a new relationship as they reveal themselves to each other. Obie Award winner Erin Arbus directs, making her Broadway debut. Arbus is a resident artist at Theater for a New Audience. I spoke with her recently and began our conversation by asking how she was chosen for this project.
Terrence approached me a couple of years ago about it, but we weren't able to move ahead with it until a couple months ago.
What can you tell me about what lets it move ahead? What happened a couple of months ago that gives it the go?
We got two amazing actors, and their schedules aligned, and we have a theater. So all of those things are small miracles.
The actors are Michael Shannon and Audra McDonald. Completely wild, wonderful casting.
Yeah, I mean, I really actually cannot imagine two better actors. And there's something about the combination of them, which is like surprising, and maybe a little inevitable. I don't, you know, yeah.
It's a little bit strange, but also it sounds like pure magic immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
You said when we began speaking that Terrence approached you about it. What is your relationship with Terrence McNally as a playwright, and how does that, you know, happen in your life that Terrence McNally comes to you and says, would you like to remount this show of mine?
Yeah, well, it's maybe one of the most amazing things that's ever happened to me. Terrence loves Shakespeare, and I have, for the last, I don't know, decade, been working off-Broadway at a theater company called Theater for a New Audience, directing a lot of Shakespeare plays. And Terrence would see them. And I met him a couple of times after performances, and but it was really kind of out of the blue that he thought of me for this, and extraordinary of him. It's a risky gesture on his part, and it means a great deal to me.
It's incredible. As you direct a lot of Shakespeare, do you feel like you keep knowing Shakespeare better as you do more and more of his plays?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the thrills about working on his plays, is that they there is no bottom. There's just, you can just keep going. And you, every time I encounter his plays, I have new insights, or, you know, when you see somebody else interpret a play that you know really well, suddenly fresh things emerge. And I think at different stages of one's life, the plays mean different things, and you connect with different characters. But they're bottomless, those plays.
When you spend so much time with Shakespeare, and then you do someone else's work, like Terrence McNally or any number of other people whose work you've directed, does one of the first best Western playwrights, does what you've learned from working on Shakespeare wiggle in, filter into directing other things?
I think it probably does. I don't exactly know how, but in thinking about this play, I directed Much Ado About Nothing, and Harold Bloom wrote something about the Beatrice and Benedict, and how with every exchange between the fencing lovers, the abyss glitters. And I think about that in relation to Frankie and Johnny, actually, because I think, although it is certainly a romantic comedy, I think the territory is actually existential. You know, there are these two middle-aged, sort of world-weary, isolated souls who, in Frankie's case, who sort of no longer believe that her dreams are possible, that she is going to have a serious relationship with a man, who's sort of at a loss for what has meaning in her life. That to me is what is the territory of the play. And so I guess it's a sort of long way of answering your question, but I guess Shakespeare's characters are so iconic, you find them sort of everywhere. And those plays also are impossible. I mean, truly impossible. That develops some muscles.
Impossible, expand on what you mean by impossible.
By impossible. Yeah, I mean, it's just so hard to translate into three dimensions, a production that is as rich and felt as the text is, in addition to the fact that there are, it's often large casts with, you know, sword fighting and you know, which you have to figure out what to do with, and you have to conceptualize it, you have to, in a way that with some modern plays you don't quite have to, or you think you don't quite have to.
How much time, and I'm sure it varies per project, but we'll just talk about Frankie and Johnny, do you spend with the text thinking about how you want it to look?
Yeah, I'm a pretty slow director. I actually don't work as much as many other directors. So I like to spend a year thinking about a show. Not necessarily working on it every day, but thinking about it and designing it.
How familiar were you with this script before you knew you were going to take it on?
I knew it a little bit, and I had seen the movie a long time ago. But yeah, it was so exciting to read it after being approached about it.
With a two-hander, directing just two people, have you done that before?
I have, not in a while, but I have. They're hard, but they're not as hard as one-man shows. Those are the hardest, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, but they almost have their own challenges. You have to keep track of so much when the company's huge.
Yeah.
But focus so much when it's small.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited to see what happens in the process with these two actors. They're gladiators. I can't wait to see what they do with each of these characters.
It's going to be so intense.
Yeah, I know. It will be, yeah.
Erin Arbus is our guest. She's directing the Broadway revival of Frankie and Johnny and the Clair de Lune by Terrence McNally. It begins previews on May 4th.
You work on a very special, unique thing called the Campfire Project. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, yeah. I collaborated with Jessica Hecht, who is an amazing actress, who had a kind of crazy, brilliant idea a couple years ago. She was responding to the refugee crisis and felt, I think, like she wanted to do something. And she decided that she wanted to create a piece of theater in a refugee camp in Greece and kind of single-handedly raised the money, made connections with an NGO called IMU in a camp called Ristona in Greece, 40 miles outside of Athens. And she brought around 20 artists from all over the world to make a production performed by the refugees in the camp. And it was a production of Shakespeare's The Tempest, a very, very abbreviated version of the play in Arabic. And we spent 3 weeks working in the camp. We did this production. It was really kind of an amazing experience.
And you directed it?
I directed it, yeah, yeah.
And I can't entirely wrap my brain around everything that must have been going on, because there's a lot going on directing a play under completely sterile, like normal circumstances. How did you focus on the art and the creation of the play inside of everything else that was going on there?
It was a wild experience. We had gone in December just to visit the camp and meet some of the people there and see, where we could do this performance. And, you know, the sort of level of depression of the residents in the camp it's kind of overwhelming. Some of them have been there since the camp opened years ago. They are in a process that is unclear as to how long it will take, where they will go. I mean, it's the average amount of time is 17 years for a refugee to find a new home. Mm-hmm. And so, I was worried that I wasn't sure if we would actually get people to commit or to make the sustained commitment that is required to put on a play. But Jessica she found an actor who is a kind of a Syrian pop star. Like, he used to judge a reality talent show. And he came with us, and he's an amazing actor, classically trained, and people in the camp recognized him. And he would just sort of walk around. And I mean, it was a little bit like the Pied Piper, and just like crowds of people would come up and want to take selfies with him. And he played Prospero. And because of that, it was kind of amazing. We were able to get a group of people who showed up every day and rehearsed the play and learned their lines. And the actor playing Ferdinand was transferred. He moved out of the camp a day before the performance, and we found this out a day before the performance that he was just gone. But he came back the next day to be in our show. Oh, wow. It was great, and the people within the camp said that they had never seen so many people gather. We had something like 200 people who watched this performance. And that's sort of one of the amazing things about theater, is that the way it can impact a community. And in this case, it's a very, very small community of 800 people in this one camp, but maybe a little significant nonetheless.
Absolutely. Do you know if there are plans to do more?
Yeah. Jessica is in the process of planning the next trip. She's not exactly sure what will happen or when it will be, but she's in sort of constant touch with IMU, which is the NGO that was sort of the umbrella organization for the Campfire Project.
Would you go back?
Yeah, I would, if it was the right project. Yeah, right.
And if you had the schedule worked.
Yeah.
Jumping kind of backwards outside of these most recent things and upcoming things, how did you begin directing plays?
I had done theater as a kid, you know, in school, as an actor, and I had worked like as a set designer and a costume designer, and my parents were both actors, but they were actually mostly unemployed, and I remember in college thinking, being interested in acting, but loving the theater, but being aware of the fact that I wasn't all that good at it. And I found the life, sort of watching my parents struggle to just having no control over whether or not they could work, and what they really wanted more than anything was to work, and they didn't all the time. And that just seemed too cruel. And so I stopped working in theater, and I majored in paint and fine art, and majored in painting, and went to painting school. But when I graduated from this painting school, I was a little bit lost, and I was a little bit tired of being alone all day long, because that is really what the life of a painter is. It's you by yourself with the work. And any problem you have to solve by yourself. And I missed being around, being a part of like a team or being collaborative. And I actually applied to Williamstown sort of at like in a sort of reckless gesture. I applied to be a directing intern at Williamstown because that was like the least expensive program there.
Oh, okay.
To apply as an actor, it was a couple $1,000s. And as a director, it was, I don't know, it was like $200 or something for the summer. I was accepted, and I directed something there and immediately knew, oh, this is what I want to do. And I remember being in high school and in college and sort of struggling to find the thing that I wanted to do. And it was such a clear moment after directing this one, or while I was directing this one little play at Williamstown.
And how do you, once you know, what do you do? How do you make people let you keep directing things?
Yeah, well,
you prove yourself, of course, but you know, at first, what do you do?
But you need the chance to prove yourself. I mean, that's the hardest thing. There is really no one path, mm-hmm. which is very frustrating and cool, but I knew that I didn't want to go back to school, and I knew I wanted to pursue directing. And the thing I really craved was to watch other directors work, because I actually didn't know anything about directing. So I wrote a letter you could go to the drama bookshop and get like a list of all the shows each season. I don't know if you can still do that. And I wrote a letter to every theater company in New York and to every director. And I asked if they needed like an assistant. And I worked as an assistant director for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. And which was, a lot of directors hate assisting, and they just feel like, oh, I could do it better. Why am I not directing? But I did not feel that way. I was really learned a lot from just watching other people work.
Do you then kind of, to develop your own method, your own style, pick things from the people that you assisted?
Yeah, you learn a lot. And I assisted great directors, and I assisted bad directors, and everything in between. And all of it was really useful to me. I remember working for this one director who made everything an argument. And
cool.
Yeah. And I thought, well, maybe that's how good work is made. Like maybe everything needs to be difficult, and you need to like fight a lot of battles. And I learned that it, in fact, that is not how good work is made necessarily. And you don't.
It's certainly,
do
there's
that.
A type of person that follows that to the moon or to the wherever, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I worked for this great director, Gerald Gutierrez, who died 15 years ago. But he had a wonderful way of like leading script analysis with a company of actors, which is something that I often do. But, you know, so you sort of pull things and learn things from other directors, learn things not to do, learn things to try, you know, and then you got to figure it out for yourself.
Do you still paint?
I do a little bit. But I have a fantasy of like actually really doing that. Sometimes I get frustrated with having to collaborate with people. And I think, oh, I wish I was alone in a room with just dealing with the problems myself. And, you know, so maybe one day I'll have like a proper little studio for painting.
It's been wonderful to speak with you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you. You asked such great questions.
Aaron Arbus directs Frankie and Johnny in the Clair de Lune, which will begin previews on May 4th and officially open on May 30th. The limited engagement concludes on August 25th. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable.